Good afternoon, everybody. It is a huge day for the Steelers and the rest of the NFL. It is roster cutdown day. The Steelers trying to get to 53 men. Still questions to be answered, like what's going on at quarterback with Will Howard and Skylar Thompson. Will Beanie Bishop, after wiping his cleats all over the Pitt logo, will he pay the ultimate price and be released by the team today? Connor Hayward, Steelers fans wanted him cut. A while back because of what his brother was doing. A payback kind of thing. That seems to have cooled off, and I don't think he's going to get cut, but who knows what surprises are in store over the next 2 hours. Andrew Filippone, Chris Muller, Donnie Football here, and you at 412-928-9370. That was the big news from last night. Kevin Stefanski, the Browns head coach, as recently as June, on the Fan in Cleveland talking about how much he loved Kenny Pickett. Fast forward to August 25th, and he loved, in air quotes, Kenny Pickett so much, he traded him to the Raiders for a fifth-round pick. Kenny Pickett has already set the record. He's tied the record for most times a quarterback has been traded in a career. And he is entering his fourth year in the league.
If he tied Sam Howell, who set the record the previous day.
If he gets traded one more time, he ties the all-time record. Do you know who has been traded more than anyone in league history, Donnie? You can get this one. He's playing in the NFL right now.
Is it Brandon Cooks?
Yes, it is. Let's go.
The weird thing about Cooks getting traded is he's an objectively good player at his position who just constantly gets dealt. The market has now told you that they don't think Kenny's very good. You were getting told by people inside the league that you talked to or heard from people who talked to those people that the perception within league circles for Kenny is much more positive than on the outside looking in.
Yep.
And it seems pretty obvious that Stefanski, as well as like our brethren over there on our sister station, 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, they have the rights to the Browns games. All their hosts were saying things like, if up until yesterday, I think, 2 days ago, if Kenny Pickett had been healthy, he'd be the starter. He would have won this job. I doubt that very much, because if that was true, the Browns would simply be waiting for their presumptive starter to get fully healthy and then give him the job, not deal him to NFL desert.
The biggest story, though, is that he is a part of that final Kevin Colbert, Mike Tomlin draft class in 2022, in which the only remnants of it left are Calvin Austin in the fourth round, and Connor Hayward in the sixth round. Mark Robinson got cut yesterday. DeMarvin Leal got cut today.
Chris Oladokun got cut 5 minutes after they drafted him.
And is a two-time Super Bowl champ. Both quarterbacks they picked have rings.
Three total.
Yeah, which is crazy. So Pickett bust. Hate to say it, but it's true. I'm not going to lie to you today and say he's not. George Pickens wrote his own ticket out of town because he had red flags that the Steelers ignored and said Mike Tomlin will figure it out with him. And it kind of worked until it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Leal.
Didn't get a second contract, though, here, so yeah, it didn't work.
Honestly, Leal's one of the worst third-round picks they've ever had. I mean, Dree Archer probably takes the cake among the Tomlin-Colbert
era. Justin Lane's up there.
Bruce Davis is another one that springs to mind, but
Donnie just did like a visible, there was a visible
remember
shudder.
Bruce Davis?
He heard the name Bruce Davis, and I'll make the face for YouTube. He went,
DeMarvin,
just a horrified
DeMarvin Leal makes Sammy Coates look like Jerry Rice among third round picks.
Well, he was the guy that when they drafted him, you know how this goes. Everyone's a little bit high on hopium, and they say, well, he might be a tweener body type, but the athletic ability, he was a five-star recruit. It's all too explosive to ignore. They'll just figure out a way to get the most out of him.
He had one pick. He had one sack in 3 years. That's his contribution to the Steelers. 28 games, one sack. Don't let the door hit your rear end on the way out of town.
Question, was he also unable to bring down the Panthers quarterback on the play that as it got extended ended up hurting Harmon for a month?
Harmon claims he was not really injured on that play. He says that he got hurt on the play before.
Really?
Yeah, he clarified that over the weekend. He stayed out there for an extra play. But the bottom line is,
well, that makes a little more sense.
It's the last, it was supposed to be like Kevin Colbert's final masterpiece. And it ended up being this black hole draft that
It set the team back.
Set the team back. It's, yeah,
there's no,
I mean,
other there's no like nice way to put it. It set the team back.
I'm not gonna make it out like the Steelers are the Browns because they're not, or the Jets because they're not, or the Raiders because they're not, or the Dolphins or the Titans or those like woe be gone franchises. But the reason why they are mired in this chronic state of mediocrity is in large part because that last draft, this going away present from a Hall of Fame general manager to Steelers fans, was a draft that outside of Kenny Heroics in his rookie year and George Pickens' acrobatic catches has yielded nothing. The saving grace could be, in air quotes, could be if Calvin Austin emerges here as a number two wide receiver with a 138th pick. But the Steelers are sending mixed messages on that, and let me explain why that is. Because if they really thought Calvin Austin was going to be a number two wide receiver, you know what they would have done, Chris? He'd have a new contract right now.
Yeah, he would.
Because he's going into the final year of his deal.
They would have price fixed him and tried to get a nice little deal where he got a nibble and they got something in return, and they felt like for the next 3 to 4 years you could count on Calvin Austin being in the lineup. But that's not happening. You know why? Part of the reason? Because they have real worries about whether or not, among other things, he's A, good enough to be a number two, and B, going to be healthy enough on a long enough term.
It's no mystery why the Steelers' offense is in this constant state of change, because they've just not drafted guys well on that side of the ball for a pretty long period of time.
Kevin Colbert's last, and I like Kevin. I've never had anything but good interactions. I always feel the need to preface this with that. Never had anything but good interactions with him. He was always gracious with his time with me. But his last several drafts, really starting with the Edmonds in the first round draft in 18, left a lot to be desired with many of these picks. I think we've litigated this, but, and I know it's coming up now because of what's happened with Leal and with Mark Robinson with the Pickett trade again. But he had a run of several years where they did not get nearly what you're supposed to get if you're a good team from the draft, just broadly speaking. Like, you average, what should you average in most drafts? You pick seven players, you would hope at least four of them, if not five, are productive NFL players to some degree.
I think you want three NFL starters and five contributors.
Yeah, I think that's right. Two like guys who are reserves who do something for you that's useful, and three starters. And maybe if you're picking in the first round, you're picking a quarterback, you want the quarterback of the future. Well, they didn't get any of that. And they drafted a safety in the first round that most teams had graded as a third round player. They left a lot of meat on that bone, and it really never stopped until through his last year. The bookend of that 5-year run where they really struggled in the draft was marked by two things at two different positions: reaching badly for a player that virtually no one else saw the same way you did.
Right. They overdrafted Edmonds, what you're saying. They trade up for Devin Bush, who was undersized. They don't have a first-round pick because they trade the pick to put a Band-Aid on a lost season.
When there was Herbert in 2019. Yep. Herbert was in the next draft that year that they could have had.
You draft a running back in the first round, even though the whole world tells you not to do it unless the guy is Superman, unless it's Saquon Barkley or Jahmyr Gibbs or Bijan Robinson. And Najee Harris, even his biggest advocate, said, well, he doesn't have breakaway speed, he can't hit a home run. Then you overdraft Kenny, I hate to say it. And I guess the jury is still out on Broderick Jones. Early returns so far in the preseason, I think, have been good. But that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a half decade of misses in the first round. It's honestly a miracle that they're not. They haven't turned into the Browns or Jets when you think about it. You miss your first round pick for a half decade? Donnie, they hit their first round pick for like 8 or 9 years in a row. And that's why they were consistently good.
Colbert was on fire in the 2000s. Like, he very rarely picked a bad player. I mean, and even then, it was like a guy like Ziggy Hood who contributed on an AFC championship team. Or like Rashard Mendenhall, who left a sour taste in everybody's mouth, but was probably better than
Kendall
what we remember.
Kendall Simmons had a brief window where he was a solid guard.
He was a fine player.
Donnie, just go in and look at the first draft.
He would crush it normally.
The first draft he and Mike did together as a tandem. Mike takes the job. They draft Timmons in the first round, a very good, like, if they drafted a guy like Timmons right now and he had that exact career for the next 8 years at off-ball backer, everyone would be happy. Then they take Woodley with the next pick in that draft, who closed out their most recent Super Bowl win with a sack.
Six sacks in the playoff run.
They get to Pony's point. Now, Sepulveda in that draft, not great. Spaeth is a blocking tight end. That's whatever. They get big play Bill Gay with their second to last pick in that round, pick or in that draft, pick 170. How the mighty fell, though. And it's Kevin and it's Mike, but because it's the last one that Kevin did, you think about his role in it. That was the last time that brain trust got their chance to put a mark on the team, and they did a bad job of it.
It makes the transition, like the Kevin Colbert retirement. It's honestly potentially one of the better things that have happened to the Steelers in the last few years. You know, provided you have an arrangement where
Why did he do the draft, though, if he was going to step aside right after it, basically?
Because he scouted it and put the work into it, and he knew that it was going to be a quarterback draft, and he believed in his own abilities so much and his own talents as a GM that he wanted to leave the franchise in a better place than where he left it. That's why.
I understand the explanation there, but should that have been permissible?
Well, yeah, because he had built up because of what Donnie said. The guy had built up so much equity here. He was a Hall of Fame GM. You're going to tell him he can't have his last draft?
I'm just saying, like, the equity
to me, that's hindsight,
was,
man.
The equity
in the moment, I did not feel that. Of course it had.
I think it was just more curious that he did the draft and then got out of the way right at, like, just the timing of more after the draft. He said, okay, I'm stepping aside, pretty much. Like, that's what got me about the whole thing. It was odd.
And, like, just one more, like, added insult on that draft is that, you know, apparently, if you go by what you hear now after the fact, which you have to take with a grain of salt because no one had the gumption in the moment to do anything about it, but the guys in that room wanted the Steelers if they were going to take a second quarterback. This is absolutely 100% true.
I know.
The scouts wanted the second quarterback to be
Brock Purdy. But they took Chris Oladokun.
But Kevin made the last pick.
They gave him a send you off on your way pick.
If his right off into the sunset pick is Brock Purdy, guess what? Who cares about the Kenny Pickett pick? He went 1-for-2 in the draft. He just flipped it. He found his franchise quarterback with the last pick instead of in the first round.
Oh, no.
But no, he went rogue and he picked a guy that the rest of the franchise thought so little of. They gave him nothing but, like, ghost runner reps at practice where he had to stand behind the play and mimic the play.
And then got rid of him as soon
as humanly
possible. And then
got rid of him immediately.
Which also just makes it funny that the Chiefs did see fit to actually pick him up and just put him on their roster at least.
Practice squad.
But yes. Yeah, he's appeared in one NFL game, and he's got two rings as a result of it.
Browns at Steelers. Is that going to be Kenny Pickett's revenge game? Kenny coming in.
Shiloh
Sanders playing on that. If Kenny comes in, does he get booed or cheered? I think cheered.
Ben. Well, we don't have to worry about that now. Because Kenny's off in Vegas. No Steelers Raiders game this year. But who knows? Maybe Kenny will get traded again in season. And there's a chance in November and December that new team would throw Kenny Two Gloves a bone.
Is he going to get a second contract in the NFL, you think?
I think so, man. There's a lot of really bad quarterbacks.
He does seem like he's headed down the Chase Daniel path where teams seemingly like him, just not enough to be their starter. I assume he goes in there and comports himself like a complete professional, does all the work.
They're raving about his professionalism in Cleveland, helping out their young players.
Yeah, they can point to him and say, look, this guy does everything the right way.
Does that play well?
I mean, yes. I mean, it seems like if he learned anything from his time with the Steelers, and especially the way it ended here and how ugly it ended here, it's that if he was going to stick in the NFL, like, being a good teammate and a good employee was important.
Chase Daniel is a little disrespectful, though, to Kenny. Chase Daniel started 5 games in his entire career and made $43 million.
It's not disrespectful if we're talking about pocketbooks.
No,
here.
We're not, but it's the all-time.
All right, who's a backup? How about Chad Henne?
Do less, make more.
How about Chad Henne?
I don't think Chad Henne made that much money, but I get what you're saying. Chad Henne probably didn't start fewer games than Kenny. Kenny started 24.
Chad Henne started 54 games,
and
man,
he made $40 million.
I mean, I think Chad Henne is kind of the road we're headed down.
I don't want to relitigate Kenny's career here because it gets exhausting. Either. The only thing I'll say about it is, what are you right about?
I just was more or less right from the start to be skeptical.
Sure. But I would say of Kenny Pickett, he only had one bad year here. They gave up on him after one bad year. His rookie year was not bad, objectively. He was sixth in rookie of the year voting.
I think
you can't say that was bad.
I think his rookie year foretold a lot of the problems that really cropped up in year two.
Yeah, I'm not here
to... I think that's the story.
Right, but the comment I made stands. He got traded after one bad year. And that's all it took for them to get rid of him. They loved him. They believed in him.
Would
he had one bad year.
Just
see
by
you later.
Using
sayonara.
One metric, would you say having a passer rating of 76.7 means you had a good year as a quarterback? I would not.
I would say if you're a franchise quarterback making serious money, it's absolutely
not. But even
not
as a
good.
Rookie quarterback, if Bryce Young's rookie year passer rating ended up at 76.
What was Ben's rookie passer rating better than that?
It was mid to high 90s.
Yeah.
We don't need to relitigate this. This was more of a broad-based discussion, but you and I are like moths to a flame when it comes to this. Bryce Young, by the way, as a rookie, was a 73.7, and we all said he had a bad rookie year.
Right, but he didn't have game-winning plays like Kenny did. That's the difference.
Well, when you win two games, there is no real time for game-winning plays.
Here is David in Imperial on the fan. Hello, David.
Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hey, bro. Malzie's here, too.
That's good. I wanted to ask you...
Can we take you off speakerphone? Can we get a better...
Yeah, hold on.
Can we hear you? Would be nice.
Is this better?
Yes, way
much.
Better.
Wow.
I wanted to ask you, what do you think the consistency is in all those years you talked about how we didn't have a great draft,
yep.
but we didn't end up being the Jets, the Browns, the Dolphins, the other teams you mentioned?
What's the
consistency? What's the pattern there?
In those years?
Yes. It's like, Coach Tomlin. Let me answer it for you. It's Tomlin.
So you're saying what's the common denominator is what you mean?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, you're saying that is a
Colbert
good thing for Mike or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. You guys are always trashing Tomlin, but it seems to be pretty consistent that, yes, mediocrity, but, you know, relevant in the conversation.
Well, you wouldn't be so naive as to suggest, though, that Mike has no say-so in the draft process, right, David?
Correct.
Okay, so he is partly responsible for these rosters that he's dragging to competence. He helps build them. He helps buy the groceries.
Very true. I get that.
But the comment you're making is like, and I know it's a cap sport versus a non-cap sport, but it would be like saying if you're a Cardinals fan, well, hey, we're not the Pirates, so... Let's not crush this team or criticize them too much. Congratulations, you're not one of the dregs of the NFL. We're supposed to give the Steelers of all franchises credit for that? That's what you're doing right now. You're feeding into the idea that like lowered expectations or lowered standards are okay.
Okay, well, I don't think that they're okay. I'm just saying consistency is king.
Consistency of what? So consistency is king for 10 straight years if they went 9-8 and didn't win a playoff game. That's good in your mind?
Not necessarily good, but like I said, they're staying relevant at the end of the year. They
David,
are.
I have a question.
Who the hell cares
about
that? No, don't hang up on him yet. David, I have a question. Would you really take 9-8 in this idea of consistency rather than being really bad and maybe having access to a top-level quarterback, which everybody acknowledges is something you almost always have to have in the NFL to succeed? That's why things like suck for luck happened in Indianapolis, because teams understand that position is of such outsized importance that if you think you've got a generational guy you could draft, you try to do everything you can to get him.
I think I honestly would. I honestly would. It keeps it more interesting rather than just dreading every week.
It doesn't feel interesting to me to know that their ceiling in most every year, unless something weird were to happen lately, is get to the wild card game and get smacked around by a team with a better quarterback.
Well, maybe that's the ceiling, but what I'm trying to convey, I guess, is it doesn't have to be. You know, something could happen like the 2005 year. Six seed, got hot at the right time.
Well, so you're saying to me, okay, so Andrew, the reason why they're never bad is because Mike Tomlin. Now give me the reason why they're never great anymore.
Well, I think you summed it up. What did you say? 5 years of missing on first round picks.
Right.
That certainly doesn't help.
So
I know he was a part of that.
So it's Kevin Colbert's fault, not Mike's.
I just said he's a part of that, but I think that those misses look, you know, spectacularly worse if they're not being better than mediocre.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. If that's the silver lining you want to put on their last few seasons, like, look, they've kept treading water post Ben Roethlisberger. Okay.
I'm not going to kill him, you know what? Because here's what I realized halfway through that call. He has a fundamentally different expectation and desire for every Steelers season than a lot of the people that are listening to this. I mean that.
I would just say back to that, though. You know, not that we need to, like, fight this battle necessarily. But wouldn't that drive home the point that Cowher was a better coach than Tomlin? Like, if David Imperial's calling in to say, look at Mike, they miss in the draft for 5 years, they don't have a quarterback, they never sink to the bottom, they never have a losing record. Well, Cowher didn't get Ben until 04 and 05, and he went to the AFC Championship game in 94, 95, 97, and 01. He went to 4 AFC Championship games without a franchise quarterback.
Stewart was really good in 01, but yeah, he wasn't a franchise passer.
Neil O'Donnell was just a guy.
Neil O'Donnell was a guy, probably like maybe at his best, you know, what, slightly above average. I would say
that. And I know the NFL has evolved, but
I was just
going
to say, to me, Bill and Mike are essentially very similar coaches, and Bill, I think, looks better and probably is better because he coached in the era where the style of ball was what he liked. Mike is, I do shudder to think about what Bill Cowher would be like coaching in the modern day NFL, because I can't tell you how many times we've heard Bill Cowher and a team is losing 24-6 at the half. They throw it over to him at the desk. What do they need to do in the second half? Got to run the ball. Got to establish the run. Got to get back in this game by pounding the rock.
All right, lots of ways you can listen to the show. We're on demand, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Many of you have made the jump over to our YouTube page. Coming up in a little bit, we have a Jakobi Meyers update with the Vegas Raiders, thanks to Adam Schefter. Wide receiver news, the Steelers cut one today. A guy that one Steelers insider said was a lock, 100% certainty to make the team. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. Today is Joe Starkey's 60th birthday. I got to give Joe props. He looks good for 60. I thought he was in his mid-50s, maybe even early 50s. And when I heard them say 60 a few times today, I thought it was just like a joke to mess with him.
Okay.
I didn't know he was legitimately 60 years old.
We've discovered that Joe is surprisingly strong, too. I think it's the rage that flows through his every cell on every second of the day.
He was born in 1965 then.
Yeah, I knew he was older than early 50s because Craig and I, 10 years ago, threw him a 50th birthday party on the air. We had people come in and sing, like, we surprised him. I actually put in some effort to try to do some nice things for him.
Donnie, how old are you now? 29?
Yeah.
So that means that Joe was your age in 1994. If you think about it.
Mm-hmm. About a year before
baseball,
I was born.
Going on strike, Steelers losing to the Chargers.
Montreal Expos having a lost season as a result. Yeah, Stan Humphries rolling into
things
town
that
fall. Who else? Who was Houston Rockets, OJ?
Yeah, it was a big year for Joe. Arnold Palmer played in his last U.S. Open here.
Uh-huh.
I played the hockey talk bed, and we're going to get back to the Steelers stuff because it is cut down day, but I do think this is worth 2 minutes on. The Penguins, not to lose out on all of the buzz that the Pirates have gotten from their new Hall of Fame and the Steelers with their Hall of Honor, have now rebooted their Penguins Hall of Fame. And so they have a bunch of guys that they put in years ago that'll go into this revamped Hall of Fame, this modernized Hall of Fame. And they also put 10 new Hall of Famers in that were voted in, including guys like Chris Kunitz. Obviously, Sid and Malkin and Letang are not in yet because they're still playing. Fleury just retired, but I think they wanted some time to go by before putting him in. So a new crop of Penguins Hall of Famers were announced today. And then they let us in, they showed us how the sausage was made, and released the names of the 21-person committee who voted these players in.
Yeah.
And it has sparked all kinds of controversy, and I think deservingly so. Because you do have old heads who have covered the Penguins for a long time, like Bob Grove.
Paul Stagerwald,
Madden.
Tom McMillan's in there.
Tom McMillan.
He's covered the Penguins and worked for the Penguins for a very long time in alternate, you know,
Pomp.
Roles. Pomp's there.
Starkey.
Joe was
on the beat and then
scribe.
Has been here the entire time.
Joe's big sliding doors moment was that he almost took a job to cover the Minnesota Wild for the Star Tribune up there.
And I think Herb Brooks' recommendation, maybe?
Yeah, like Joe's a hockey head, man.
So, you know, that's that part. And Rob Rossi, I forgot Rob's name. So those guys have covered the Penguins.
So Rob, love him or hate him, I think Rob knows
for a
what
long
he's talking
time.
About.
Because the Penguins wanted to spread out, like, okay, so 93.7 The Fan gets Starkey.
Mm-hmm.
KDK TV gets Pomp.
Yeah.
The Athletic gets Rossi. Josh Yoey didn't get a vote. Matt Venzel, Post-Gazette, gets a vote. Jenna Harner gets a vote. Stocky, Channel 4, gets a vote.
Michelle Cracciolo from Penn's Inside Scoop.
Right. So,
is a voting member.
They did it in this very kind of almost democratic, like it's the Senate.
We're getting one person from each outlet that would have a vested interest in having covered the team, and they go Rossi over Yoey. I would say,
but
you got to pick two there. I think you got to let them both cover the team both vote on this.
I don't want to speak for Jenna Harner. I think Jenna does a great job.
Well, Jenna also, didn't she play like hockey in college or something? She played some sort of
that
thing in college.
Which is fine. Like, I'm not, this is not at all to denigrate or criticize her hockey opinions, which I'm not doing. What I'm saying is, though, if we're voting on a Hall of Fame for the Penguins, my opinion, the people who are voting on guys who played here in the 1990s and 2000s should mostly be made up of people who were here watching those guys play. And so, like, I would say for myself, that would disqualify me from being on this committee. Matt Venzel has been here for, like, 15 minutes. He's not from Pittsburgh. He's a Penguins. He can cover the current team fine, or the team for the last 5 years. I don't know how that lends him credibility to decide if Ron Francis should be in the Penguins Hall of Fame or not. So I just think it was a pretty ass-backwards way for them to convene a committee to vote on who should be in the Penguins Hall of Fame. They tried to like do it like you do for youth sports, where everybody gets a trophy and every media organization is represented, where you're really not getting the people who are most qualified to decide who's in your Hall of Fame, which I think is a pretty big deal, who's in your Hall of Fame and who's not. You disagree, clearly.
No, I don't, actually. I think it's curious. Like, I thought about half of the voting block would be qualified from just a sheer experience around the team standpoint to vote on it. And I think this is where, when they try to satisfy the idea that, hey, you all these different outlets cover the team, we want everybody that covers the team to sort of feel included in this, is where you fall down a slippery slope, and then you feel like, as you put it, with either Jenna or Matt Venzel, or I'm sure there's somebody else on that list I could probably include, you literally didn't watch the people play because you weren't born.
And that's no slight at them.
For example, if there was a Steelers Hall of Fame that needed to be voted on, honestly, and they said Donnie Football is our emissary here, and he was going to be, even you, and I know you both are psychos who watch 70s Steelers games on YouTube, but you didn't actually watch in the moment. You didn't have a frame of reference because you weren't alive. I would think that that would be odd. That would be very odd. Me too. Same deal. Like, oh, Chris, we want you to vote on a Pirates Hall
of
Fame. There's going to be guys from the 70s and 80s.
And Josh does no work with the radio station, and I don't hang out with him, so I'm not, like, stumping for a friend here. I just think it's ridiculous that the guy who is most synonymous with covering your team doesn't get a vote when, like, every other beat writer does.
I guess I would just say you didn't need to have maybe every outlet. Maybe you could expand it as the years went on as to who voted on it. Just people who covered the team, you know, had accrued more years. But yeah, I thought that was strange. I thought just Josh's omission was strange. And it's marked one of the few times that I've agreed with a Kabali tweet when he just basically said, what's going on here if Josh isn't voting on this?
Oh, so we give Kabali credit for...
For one time, I'm going to say Kabali, the sun shined on a dog's ass, and I think he was right on the money.
He uncovered this.
Yeah. Well, he
did the investigative research.
He just tweeted it out and said, how on earth could you possibly exclude Josh from this?
Carolyn Clinton joins us right now, one of the 93.7 The Fan Queens. Hello, Carol. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're great.
I just wanted to make a general comment on the drafting. Remember,
yes.
Remember the good old days when the Steelers would draft receivers and they were an automatic hit? When is the last time the Steelers drafted a receiver that worked out?
All right, let's do this. Chase Claypool, no. George Pickens, no.
Deontay,
no.
No.
Definitely
end, no.
Just James ended. Washington, no. How about Juju?
I guess he would be the last one, and I guess we kind of have mixed reviews on him, right?
Correct. Yes, 100%. Yeah, I agree.
It's been a while.
I mean, they get this by the people that cover the NFL draft. They trust the Steelers on wide receivers more than any other team. And to your point, Carol, the great irony is we don't have good receivers now, which is why for 2 years we've talked about finding a wide receiver to help out our quarterbacks. And our best wide receiver is a guy we had to trade for and give up a second-round pick to get. It wasn't even
right.
DK Metcalf from Seattle.
Right. That's what I mean. We used to make fun of Baltimore because we had all these great receivers and they never could find any. Well, where are ours?
Well, I'll tell you what, Carol.
Very well said, Carol.
The sad part is if you say that Juju is like in between leaning yes, that was good, you really do have to go all the way back to 2010 and then 2009 when they get Sanders, Brown, and Mike Wallace, three guys in two drafts. It's been that long. Here are some names that they tried to draft at wide receiver in between the Juju draft and that. Could I interest anybody in a gently used Tony Clemens? I believe
a
Valley,
he's a local kid.
Valley High product. Could I interest you in a Justin Brown? No?
Another local kid. He went to Penn State.
By way of Oklahoma. Could I interest you in Marcus Wheaton?
Yep. Don't forget about Sammy Coates, who's already come up on the show.
Dree Archer, listed as a wide receiver. Martavis Bryant couldn't screw his head on straight permanently, but he's the other guy that was good, but we all look at that as kind of a failure in the end.
Here is John in Zeeley. Hello, John.
Hey there, guys.
Hey, what's up, John?
You have a great show every day.
Thank you.
The only way I can make it shortly brief is that we've never had a good draft as a quarterback since Tomlin's been there because he's been very inconsistent after Ben retired. So, I mean, he brought in two other guys, and where are they right now with the Jets and the Giants? And then Pickett, I mean, yeah, he was a homeboy from Pittsburgh. Yeah, bust. But now we have to know he never wanted to pick a quarterback until the seventh round because he's so set on Aaron Rodgers this year. So,
thank you, John.
Well,
Tomlin does believe that Aaron Rodgers is going to turn this whole thing around and this is going to be a magical year. And I think
and if that doesn't happen, will it finally disabuse him of the notion that he knows quarterback play?
Of course not. No, I think he was the one that made sure that they didn't pursue Justin Fields any further, which honestly I agree with him on. I would not have given him the contract that the Jets did. Here is Michael in Highland Park. Hello, Mike.
How you doing?
Hey, man.
I just wanted to, you know, touch on I can understand that some of these draft picks that came through the Steelers didn't pan out, but are y'all just really like singling Tomlin out for being responsible for those draft picks?
I mean, we started the show saying it was Kevin Colbert who like really struggled badly with his last five drafts. I think Mike has a big hand in those drafts, but they're Kevin's picks. That's how I feel about it.
I mean, I feel like it's Kevin's picks as well, and that, you know, what Tomlin was dealt with and have to work with. Because you want to be competitive regardless.
No.
Of
you can't say what Mike's dealt with, though, and had to work with because he did have a hand in picking it. I don't do two things that happen a lot in this town. All the good picks are the GM. All the bad picks are Tomlin, just like steering the wheel and taking it into a ditch. A lot of people do that. I think it's lazy. I think it's stupid. I think it's ulterior motives. Yeah. What I also do not do is act like Mike Tomlin just sits back and twiddles his thumbs while the entire scouting department and GM make picks and then tell him what they're going to do. Neither one of those things is true. The truth is, of course, in the middle.
I can understand that, but we've been competitive. Now, can you agree that in our division, we're going against two of the top quarterbacks that's in a division, and we're competitive every year against them.
Yes.
Every year.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm saying. When you roll it up in there with people like Duck Hodges, Mason Rudolph, and you can still pull out 10, you know, 9 wins, I mean, he's doing an excellent job to me to even be competitive against the quarterbacks that you have to go against in the AFC conference, because it's loaded.
But he is a huge hand, to Chris's point, in bringing in the quarterbacks since Ben left. So how do you ignore one and only concentrate on the other is what I think Chris is asking you.
Well, look, this is what I'm saying is that even if this is a – let's just say hypothetically the Steelers have a bad season.
Yep.
And we get to pick in the top 5.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
It's not a guarantee that any of these quarterbacks that's coming out is going to pan out. The percentage of it is very low for, you know, you get a Patrick Mahomes out of these type of drafts. It's just, you know, they thought that Trevor Lawrence was the best prospect since Andrew Luck. And look where that got the Jaguars.
But I guess, like, what's your end game here to say, like, hey, it's a low percentage play, Michael? Like, what's the end game? Mike does a pretty good job, all things considered. I mean, they haven't won a playoff game in almost a decade, man. And they haven't been competitive in one in about that long.
Yeah, but we won as many playoff games as the Baltimore Ravens did since 2011.
Okay, you went back to an arbitrary number that includes a big chunk of Ben Roethlisberger's career, though.
But that's still, that's like, Cowher only had Ben Roethlisberger for what, 2 seasons?
Yes, and he went to an AFC Championship game and won a Super Bowl with him. What's the point?
Okay, and Mike Tomlin been in 2 Super Bowls, right?
Yep.
So that's what I'm saying. It's like, we're, you know, like Mike Tomlin is clearly one of the best coaches ever. And we're dealt with.
No, he's not. He's clearly not that, though. He's clearly not one of the best coaches of all time. He has one Super Bowl win.
He has the best winning percentage next to Bill Belichick.
So you think he's on par with Bill Belichick?
I'm not saying that he's – yeah, I would put him in that category.
With a guy that's won 6 Super Bowls, are you on drugs?
Who would you say is a better coach, Andy Reid or Mike Tomlin?
I can't say Andy Reid's a better coach.
Oh, stop it.
Come on, man.
Come on, dude.
What was Andy Reid before Patrick Mahomes?
He was going to the NFC Championship game 4 years in a row in Philadelphia.
He won almost 60% of his games there.
Yes, he did go to a Super Bowl. Yes, he did go to a Super Bowl. Yes, he did.
He lost to the Patriots 24-21 in 04.
Okay, but could we can agree on this, right? Was the AFC a much stronger conference than them? Than where he was at? Where Andy Reid was coaching at?
Not necessarily.
The AFC had Tom Brady, which was kind of the AFC's problem and everybody's problem.
No, they had Tom Brady. They had Peyton Manning.
Sure.
You know, it was – but Ben Roethlisberger was right there in that tier.
Yep.
With Phillip Rivers and everybody else in that tier.
Yes, we all watched those teams play. You're right.
This is my whole point is – where was Andy Reid before Patrick? When he had Alex Smith, they wasn't doing nothing.
They went to the playoffs every year with him, yes. I think, except one.
And we took him out the 1 year, right?
Yes, it was Ben Roethlisberger versus Alex Smith.
And that was the impetus for them to go trade up, get Patrick Mahomes, and draft possibly what will end up being the greatest quarterback of all time, matched with one of the greatest offensive minds of all time. And if I were going to zero in on one thing that makes Andy Reid clearly better than Mike Tomlin, Andy Reid has continued to change with the times and innovate with the times, and Mike has continued to kind of want to do the way he always has done, and he's gotten passed by.
And don't act like Andy Reid gets no credit for Patrick Mahomes.